Okay. Today's daf is Mem Zayin. We're going to start at the two dots, Mem Vav Amud Bet, just before the lines get wider. Chaim Parashin and Chata. Sure, we'll go back a little to the Mishnah from the day before. Okay. Refuah Shleima for the week. Le David Avram ben Miriam, Dvar Bat Dina, Orli Pnina Bat Rachel, Frida Chaimalk, Esther Bat Zipporah, Yael Miriam Bat Chaya, Yaakov Ben Rosa, David Ben Golda, Michal Eshevet, Dvar Bat Kadima, Daphne Chaya Bat Sarah, Taya Rachel Bat Tamar Sarah, Ilana Mira Bat Dina, Rezal Bat Pesha. Lilonish Machana Bat Atara, Rezal Bat Sarah, Tzvi Hirsch Ben Yaakov, Halevi Umela, Yosef Ben Tzvia Cohen, Oz Avram Shun Ben Eliezer, Yitzvak Halevi Vechana. Okay. The Mishnah was a very famous Mishnah. Sorry we didn't learn it together, although we did make reference to it earlier. I'll just read through the Mishnah, Mem Vav Amud Aleph, to get us started today. Shur Shenagachet HaPara. A shur gores a para. And Benimtza Ubara Betzida. And then we find the Ubar on the side, the embryo, the fetus, dead. Ve'ein Yadua Im Ad Shalonag Chayalda, Im Ishanag Chayalda. So now the question is, we don't know if the nigicha happened while she was still pregnant, and therefore the damage for the fetus goes to the owner of the para, or she gave birth first, and then therefore the damage of the nigicha had absolutely nothing to do with the owner of the shor. So since it's mutal b'safek, okay, the Gemara immediately says this is obviously Sumchus's opinion, which is the mamona mutal b'safek cholkim. We split 50-50, as opposed to chachamim who say hamotzi mechavero alav haraya, the one who tries to get paid has to prove, the burden of proof lies on him. But Sumchus says we split a 50-50. So how do you split a 50-50 here? Mishalem chatzi nezek lepara urevia nezek levlad. Chatzi nezek for the para because the assumption is a short time. And the Vlad, we're supposed to pay chatzi nezek, but we don't know if we're supposed to pay chatzi nezek or not. So it's safek. So we're going to split it 50-50, so you only pay a quarter damages. Okay, now we're going to have the flip case. V'chem para shenakhat ashur. If a para gores ashur, v'nimtza vlada betzida, and then we find the Vlad outside, okay, and now the question is, Ein yadua im, meaning the baby was born, okay, the animal was born. Ve'ein yadua im ad shalona kayada, imishana kayada. The whole question now is, what was the shor worth at the time? Remember, what happens with the shor time? You pay migufo. You pay from the body of the animal. So, if the body of the animal is going to be worth something different, if it's pregnant or if it's already, the fetus is born. So now we have to evaluate. So what do we do? And this is a very confusing line. This is what we're going to start with. Mishtalem chatzi nezek min ha-para u'revia nezek min ha-vlad. So what do? We take chatzi nezek from the para, and we take revia nezek from the vlad, and that's what we pay. Okay, now this is going to be very strange, because if it's a short time, you're supposed to pay chatzi nezek. So now we're saying half of the damage we take from the para and a quarter we take from the vlad. So you end up with three-quarters damage, or how do you understand this bichlal? So that's what the Gemara is going to start with. Okay? Chatzi nezek, so now look at mem vav amubet by the two dots. V'chein parash and akha tashur. Chatzi nezek u'revia nezek, palganis ku debay l'shlume, kula nizka nechi revia maya vidate. Okay, this is like when we say it's a quarter two, you know, we don't say it's 7:45, we'll say it's a quarter to 8. That's what they mean by kula nizke nechi revia. It means three quarters. Okay, it's just saying all the nezek minus a quarter. Okay, so we're saying it sounds like you pay half plus a quarter damages, which comes out to three quarters. So now what on earth are you doing paying three quarters damages? That makes no sense. You're only supposed to pay half damages.
But you're paying for two animals.
Okay, let me make sure we understand the situation. One para attacked a shor. We now have to pay the damages for the shor. Where do we come up with the chatzi nezek for the shor? According to the simple reading of this Mishnah, we pay half the amount of damages. Okay, let's say the shor was worth 200, okay? And the para was worth, let's say, 100, okay? So now, remember, you only pay megufo, so we're only going to get up to 100 maximum. Or no, let's say a better example. The para was worth 200 also. Okay, let's say the para was worth 200. So what are we going to do? We're going to take 100 from the para, and we're going to take chatzi nezek, assuming the vlad had at least, let's say the vlad was worth 50, okay? We'll talk about later how we evaluate the value of the vlad. But then you would pay, according to this, 100 from the para, because that's half of 200, and a quarter, which is 50, from the vlad. Okay, even if the vlad is only worth 25, so you pay 125. Either which way, you're going to pay more than half damages. So how could you possibly pay more than half damages? So obviously, that's not the way to read the Mishnah, okay? But that's what it sounds like. It sounds like you pay half damages from the para and a quarter damages from the vlad, which means you're paying three quarters. So it doesn't make any sense. So now we have to understand, what does this mean? Half damages from the para and a quarter from the vlad. So we're going to have Abai and Rava have a machloket about how to understand this. Amar Abai, chatzi nezek means echab me'arba'a benezek, u'revi'a nezek echab mishmona benezek. What are we going to pay here? Half of it is going to come from the para, which means half of the half, which is going to be a quarter. In other words, you're going to pay, let's say it was worth 200, so you're going to pay 50 from the para itself. And now, in theory, in other words, what's the idea here? First of all, the whole assumption of this is that somehow when the para is nogeach, it's goring together with the vlad, that the vlad has something to do with it. And this is all we're going to see later. It's based on this concept that ubar ki yerech imo dami. It's like a part of the body. And therefore, there's two entities going on here, and each one is responsible. So now the issue is going to be, well, the para is 100% responsible, but yet it's like a shutaf. So each one has to pay together half damages. So how are we going to evaluate? So each one, in theory, should pay a quarter, right? Okay? Each one should pay a quarter of the damages. So if we want to get a quarter, right? So if, let's say the damage is 200. So we want each one to pay 100. I'm sorry. Each one, right? They only pay 100. So each one pays 50. So you would take 50 from the para and 50 from the vlad. But what's the problem? The vlad is suffic whether the vlad was part of the damages or not. So his portion is going to be split in half. In other words, half is going to go to the mazik, half to the nizak. So let's read this inside. So what are you going to end up with? Echa me'arba'a benezek, that's one quarter of damages, u'revi'a nezek. Okay, the chatzi nezek means echa me'arba'a benezek, means a quarter, right? Because it's a half of what they're supposed to pay. So a half of a half is a quarter. The echa mishmona benezek, sorry, revi'a nezek, what's the quarter nezek they said in the Mishnah about the vlad? Is echa mishmona benezek, is 1/8. Right? Because one half of one quarter is 1/8. So because this is mamona mutaba safek, they only pay 1/8. So altogether, the nizak is only going to get 3/8 here. Because the nizak loses out because there's some aspect that's safek. So you follow? They're both shutafim. They each have to share the half. But one of the halves that shares it is safek. So we're going to split that 50-50 because this is sumchus. Who says mamona mutaba safek chokim? Okay. So now they say, well, again, what's the case though? The ipara de uvlad dechad ninhu. If the assumption is that the para and the vlad both belong to the same person, okay? So hachinami dematze amrle labala para mimanafshach chatzi nezek havli. Then the owner of the shore can say to the owner of the para, listen, I don't care whether it was you with the vlad, without the vlad, it doesn't matter. It's all owned by you. No matter what, you owe me half damages. You're not going to get away with paying me 3/8. You caused damage. Chatzi nezek's worth. Give me chatzi nezek. Ella lo, so therefore they said that's not the case. Ella lo, sricha must be the case like this. De para dechad uvlad dechad. The para is owned by someone, but the owner sold the vlad. Okay, you can see people can do that, right? You can sell the potential offspring to somebody else. So then, right, again, how are you going to have the case? E dechadim, so now you have two people you're collecting from, right? So one you're going to pay a quarter, and one you're going to pay an eighth. So now, what's the case though? If you went first to the Baal Para, hachinami de amale le Baal Para, para ditcha ziktan, havli raya di'ilach shutfe. If first the owner went, the owner of the shore goes to the owner of the para and say, hey, look, your para attacked me. And the Baal Para says, hey, but it had a vlad, and the vlad belonged to someone else, and go get damages from him. So the owner of the shore can say, hey, look, I came to you to get paid damages. Prove it to me that the vlad was still inside when the attack happened. And if you can't prove that to me, well, then I'm taking half damages from you. I'm not going to take a loss when you have no proof. And even Sumchus would agree with that because it's not even mutab safek yet. He's saying, until you can prove to me that there's a shutaf, then I'm not even willing to discuss anything. So therefore, it must be the case, Ela dekadim tave labal vlad tchila. It was a case where he went to get the money from the owner of the fetus. And then what happens? He goes to the owner of the Vlad, and he says, pay me the money, right? And then the owner of the Vlad says, I don't know what you're talking about. The Vlad was born before the Nigikha. He wasn't even involved. And then they start arguing about that, and then he goes to the Bala Para, and then to Amarle, so then the Bala Para could say, Gilit, and then he tries to get it all the money from the Bala Para, right? He tries to get the full damages, so the Bala Para can say to him, Gilit adatcha deshutfeili. You yourself admitted that I had a shutaf, because you went to claim the money from the Bala Vlad. So I'm certainly not paying you everything. Okay, so that's a case where we would have this scenario. So now we're going to say the scenario is like this. The Bala Shur first went to the Bala Vlad, then went to the Bala Para, and then the Bala Para could say, look, you know, I'm only paying my portion. You already proved that you know that I have a shutaf. You work that out with him, and obviously then they're going to split it because they can't prove either which way. Ika de Amre, some people say, no, you could even say it the other way. Af agav dekadim tave labala para tchila, even though he went first to the Bala Para, matse matchele, he could still have a claim, the Bala Shur. De Amrle made a, I'm sorry, the Bala Para could still claim. De Amrle made a yade de shutfa itli. Since, what's the story? Everybody knew the Para was pregnant. So we have a chazaka that the Para was pregnant. So therefore, the Bala Para can say, even if the Bala Shur didn't admit that there was a Vlad, or didn't go to the Vlad first, he could say, look, there's a chazaka that my Para was pregnant. So my chazaka that the Para at some point was pregnant, and at some point this nigicha happened, and therefore go prove that the chazaka was broken, that she actually had the baby. Okay? So therefore I have proof that I have a shutaf, and therefore you can't claim chatzi nezek from me. You can only claim a quarter. Okay? That's all Abaye's understanding. That what we're talking about here is the Para only pays half of half, which is a quarter, and the Bala Vlad has to pay an eighth, because that's the part mutal b'safek. Rava doesn't agree with this. I'm a Rava. Atu achame arba'a benezek v'chamish mona benezek katane. If you really it meant a quarter and an eighth, what would it have said in the Mishnah? A quarter and an eighth. But the Mishnah said half and a quarter. So don't start telling me half is half of chatzi nezek and a quarter of chatzi nezek. It would have said, would have made it much more clear. The Mishnah in general is usually pretty clear. So he disagrees with this reading. So he says, chatzi nezek ravina nezek katane. It says half and a quarter. So Ela Amarava Laolam Bepara Uvla Dechad. It is a case where the Para and the Vla belong to one person, which is probably a much more standard case anyway, right? A bias case is a little, you know, I'm sure they did sell the Vladot, but it can't be the most common of cases. Vahachi Kamrina. Ita le para mishalem chatzi nezek mi para. Leita le para mishalem revia nezek mi vlad. Remember the whole law of migufo. What does migufo mean? If the animal, right, we take it from the animal, which means if the animal's there, we can take the damages from the animal. If the animal's not there, then we can't necessarily get paid damages. So therefore, what happens here? If the para is there and we can take the damages from the para, then we take the chatzi nezek. So now we're going to learn, instead of chatzi and revia, which is how we first understood this, we're now going to say it's chatzi or revia. It's going to depend on the situation. If you have the para and the para is there, then we're going to take chatzi nezek from the para. But if the para is not there and the vlad is there, then we're going to demand nezek migufo of the vlad. But in that case, since it's mamon and mutal b'safek, and we don't know for sure whether the vlad was part of the damages or not, we're only going to be able to take revia nezek from the vlad. So in that case, the nizak is going to lose out. Okay, the one who got damaged is going to be at a loss. He's only going to get a quarter. Okay, now we say here, Tama de lo yad inan I have a vlad bahada. Kinagchat. This is the reason for this is because what? Because we didn't know if the vlad was inside the body or not when it damaged. Ilohava, right? Whether it was or not. Aval ipshitalan de have a vlad bahada. But if we know for sure that the vlad was inside, what would be the obvious assumption of the, right? Learning from our Mishnah, what would we assume? Kinagcha mishtalin kule nezek mi vlad. Right? From here, what do you learn? That if, what's the assumption of the Mishnah? It's only because we didn't know if the Vlad was inside or not. But let's say it was a case where the Para was a pregnant Para who attacked a Shur. And then the Para is not around, but the Vlad is. Can we take Chatzi Nezek from the Vlad? Definitely, right? Because we know for sure it's not mamona mutal b'safek. So what is this underlying assumption of this? Rava l'tame, this Rava goes l'shitato, da'amar Rava, parashi zika govemi vlada. If a para damages while it's pregnant, then you can take damages from the vlad, my taima gufahi. And this is where the Gemara doesn't use these words, but the Mepharshim do, which we've seen in other places, that the ubar is ki yerech imo dami. Okay, the ubar is basically considered integrally connected to the mother, and therefore, when the vlad is actually born, and let's say if we want to take damages from the vlad, we can do that. Okay, so let's say the vlad is worth 100 and the damage was 200, and we want to take chatzin yesek. You can take it from the vlad if you want. Let's say you prefer to have the vlad rather than the para itself, or the para is not there. So if it's clear that the para was pregnant at the time of the attack, then for sure you can take it according to Rava. Clearly, this is a debate. Not everybody agrees with this, and that's why we have to say Rava goes l'shitato, but not everybody agrees with him. Okay, the Gemara isn't saying that, but it's obvious. It's implicit from here that not everybody agrees that the ubar is considered part of the mother, and you can take damages from the ubar if you want.
What would the other shita be? If you know for a fact that while the cow bored, then inside,
then what would you do? You'd evaluate the value of migufo as the value, I guess, of the animal with the embryo inside, which is valued a little bit higher. But you can only take it from the para itself. You can't take it from the ubar. Okay. So now they're going to tell us, though, but there's a difference between a para and a tarnagolet when it comes to this. Tarnagolet shizika eino govemi beitzata. Okay. The way they viewed, okay, I don't know enough about scientifically how this works, but the way they viewed a tarnagolet was that the beitza, okay, this is all like, you know, the way the fetus is connected to the mother, right, like an umbilical cord, okay? So the egg they viewed as a totally separate entity within the tarnagolet. And therefore, right, the hen and the egg is not the same as a calf inside, an embryo of a calf inside a cow's body. Because they viewed it as, this is disconnected. Now, some of the Mepharshim say it depends at what stage. It's only once the egg is totally formed, then it's not connected anymore. But at an earlier stage, when it's just being created in formation, then it's still connected to the mother hen, and then it would be considered part. But once the egg shell is, you know, the shell is totally formed, then the assumption is it's totally sealed, the shell. It no longer has any connection to the mother, and therefore it's considered a separate entity. And you wouldn't say the same was true in a case of a tarnagolet. Okay, I don't know if we have any tarnagolet going goring other, but I guess a tarnagolet could cause damage, right? That's true. She could cause all sorts of damage. Okay. My time, and what's the reason? Pirsha ba'almahu. Okay, this means it's something that comes out of it, but it's not integrally connected, like mufrash. It's separated from it. Okay, but Amar Rava, another halacha Rava says, when it comes to the case of damages, how we assess damages of the para, let's say, now we're going back to the first case in the Mishnah, okay? It's confusing because it's two different cases. The suffix is always the same, but the cases are different. The first case was where the shor attacked a pregnant para. Now, how do we assess damages? We don't know if the para was pregnant or not pregnant, right? So the damages are going to be evaluated differently whether we say it's pregnant or not. So now, when we come to evaluate damages with the ubar inside, what does Rava say? Ein shamin lepara b'fnei atzma ulivlab b'fnei atzmo. We don't say, okay, how much is a para worth and how much is a fetus worth? That's not the way we evaluate it. Ela shamin livlad al gav para. We figure out how much a pregnant para would be sold for, and how much a non-pregnant para would be sold for. You understand the difference? We don't say how much is a fetus worth and how much is the para worth, and we're going to add those up, because the assumption is if we add up, you know, let's just give out some random numbers. Let's say the para is worth 100, and then pregnant it would be worth 120. But if you start to separate it and you say what's a para worth and what's a fetus worth, you might actually put a fetus up to 40. As its own separate entity, it might actually be worth more. So comes Rav and he says, we don't do it that way. Why? If you say that we do it based on the para and the embryo and the fetus, that it's going to be, let's say, 140 in my example, you're basically going to put the mazik out. He's going to have to pay more money. Now, why we care about this, we'll see later. In other words, so what? The mazik actually damaged. Maybe he should be out more money. So we'll see later why. V'chein atam otzein, here's another case, b'kotea yad avdo shel chaveiro. Same thing if you cut off the hand of an eved. So how do you assess the damages? You assess how much would he be sold for with a hand and as a slave, and how much he would be sold for now that he doesn't have a hand. That's how you evaluate the damage, as opposed to saying how much, right, in this case, what would you say? How much is an eved, right? How much is the hand of an eved worth, and how much, right? It's a little weird how, what exactly you would say here. Ah, right. This is how they, I knew there was a way they explained it. Rashi says, Kama adam rotze litol liktoa yad eved kazeh. How, if someone offered you money and said, if I chop off your eved's hand, how much money would you take for that? Like, we don't assess it based on that. We assess it based on what's an eved sold for in the shuk with a hand and what's an eved sold for in the shuk without a hand. V'chein atam otze b'mazik sadeh shel chavero. The same thing. If you destroy a section of his property, we don't say how much was the section worth and how much, right, is the damage to the field. But you would say, how much is the field worth with this section, and how much is this field worth without this section? And then you would evaluate, right, what would the field be sold for with it? What would it be sold for without it? So Amar le Rav Acha Barei de Rava le Rav Ashi. V'idinahu l'chush mazik. In other words, if that's the law, then we should evaluate it. If he really did attack, you know, destroy the embryo, then we should figure out what's it worth by itself. In other words, why do we care to make the mazik out more money? If that's what the damage the mazik caused, so let him pay. So what do we say? Mishum da'amarle, parama abrata aziktcha, parama abrata shemina lach. It's not because we don't want to make the mazik pay more than he needs to. The point is, the mazik can claim, I attacked, you know, my shore attacked a pregnant animal, so I'm going to pay you based on the value of a pregnant animal. I'm not going to, he didn't attack the fetus outside of, right? We didn't deal with your arm outside of your body or your this aruga, this section outside of your field. It was part of your field. I attacked a field. I attacked, right? My shore attacked part of your field. It attacked part of your, you know, attacked your animal. So therefore, that's the law, okay? It's not that we just want to not make the mazik out money. So now they say, pshita, it's obvious, if para dechad uvla dechad. Pitma lebal para, nafchamai. In a case where the para belongs to one person and the vla belongs to another person, now we have two aspects that a pregnant para, what happens to a person when they get pregnant? They gain weight. Now, they don't only gain weight generally, okay? Some people are exceptions to this rule, but most people don't only gain the weight of the baby. They gain other weight because they're eating a lot more food. Okay, so imagine a para. Para is eating a lot more food because it's pregnant. It gets much fatter. Okay, besides the fetus, it's not just that it's big because there's a fetus inside, it just gets fatter. So a fatter para is worth more because it has more fat on it. So the fat for sure goes, so let's say, now this para was attacked while it was pregnant. It's now got more fat on it because it's pregnant. So who gets it? The bala vlad, because it's because of the vlad that the para got fatter, or the bala para, because the fat is on the para. So they say that's obvious that the fat is going to go to the bala para. But what about the fat, nafcha, the volume, the sheer size of the para? Forget about the fat. The size of the para is much bigger because it has a fetus inside. So now that's because of the fetus, right? So now you might say, maybe the fact that this para is worth more because of its sheer size, maybe that would go to the bala vlad. So there's a machloket about this. Rav Papa amar la bala para, Rav Acha Barei de Rav Ika amar cholkin. Rav Acha Barei de Rav Ika says, we split it 50-50. So the fact that this para, before it was pregnant, was worth 100. Now that it's pregnant, it's worth 120. Now, of that 120, let's say 10 of it is because of its size, and 10 of it is the fetus itself. So the 10 of its size, according to the halacha now, is going to get split between the owner of the vlad and the owner of the para. Okay, and that's the hilchata. The hilchata cholkin. We paskin that, we split it 50-50. Okay, that was strange cases of pregnant para. Now we're getting back to a more typical case, maybe. Okay, new Mishnah. Hakadar shechnis k'terotav l'chatzar balabayit shelo bereshut. Okay, this is going to be a problem of pronouns. Who's talking about who and what? We'll see. So a potter puts his pots inside, we've seen this case, inside the chatzar of the balabayit. Okay? I bring my pots into your property without telling you. Okay? Shelo bereshut. I just put them in your property. I don't ask your permission. Vishavra behemtosha balabayit, and your animals break my pots. Patur. You're obviously patur. Why? Because I put my stuff there without rishut. It's in my property, right? Who said you could put... It's in your property. Who said I could put it there? You're not going to stick your stuff in my property and then claim that my animals are responsible. I never took upon myself responsibility. So you're patur. What if, when the, you know, let's say they tripped on the pot, your animals, and got hurt. Im huskabahem balak derot chayav. Okay, if your animals got damaged by the pots, tripped and fell and got damaged, then I am responsible. I, being the balak derot, I stuck my things in your rishut, right? That's bor, basically. Right? I stuck my obstacle in your property. I didn't ask permission. I'm obviously responsible to pay for damages. Let's say you gave me permission. Now, the assumption of Tanakhama is if you gave me permission to put my pots inside your property, what were you doing? You were accepting responsibility to watch over them. And therefore, so if your animals broke my pots, you're chayav to pay because you assumed responsibility of shmira. And at this point, okay, we're going to see later in the Mishnah that Rebbe disagrees. And Rebbe says, unless I said I'm going to be a shomer, right? I was saying, yeah, if you want to stick them here, you can stick them here, but I wasn't saying I'm going to watch over them. Okay, so there's a difference of opinion about this. So Tanakhama, right now that we're reading, says you're chayav, because stama, okay, if we just don't have any more other than you said you gave me rishut to put them in, that means you're accepting responsibility to be a shomer. Now we're going to have the same exact case, basically, with minor variations, but basically the same case, with you put perot, okay, not pots, and then you put animals. Okay, the Mefreshim say, why do we have to have all three cases? So you could just say simply, the Mishnah is giving you three different cases, which is probably the most obvious answer. But the Mefreshim try to build a case that perot, and it's what's the most likely to get damaged? Pots, right, because they're very breakable. Perot, less likely to get damaged, and the shore, even more less likely to get damaged. If I put my shore on your property, I'm not expecting the shore to get attacked by someone, and, you know, so, and the point is that each case is a bigger chidush, okay? That even in this case, the assumption is that you're accepting shmira, even though maybe you didn't really need shmira, but you're still accepting shmira, okay? But again, still then you could say, why don't you just bring the least obvious case, and then we would have been able to learn all the others from it. And that's why I think it's just randomly giving three cases to kind of give different examples. Hichnis perotav l'chatzer balabayit. So if you put fruits in someone's reshut, shelo birishut, okay, without permission, v'chaltam behemtan shabalabayit, and the animal eats it, patur. By the way, another reason that they could be giving each case is because each case has a little bit of a minor variation, and it could be they want to teach you all the details of all the cases, and that's an even better answer. And if they got damaged by them, the animals got damaged by the perot. So now the Gemara is going to talk about this, that when it says huskabahen, it means it slipped on the fruits, not that it got damaged while eating the fruits. Okay, in other words, what could happen? The animal could overeat and get sick from it and get damaged by that. Okay, but that's not what it's talking about, because there's a separate issue with that. We'll get into it at the end of the daf today. So now we're going to assume that it means if the animal slipped on the fruits, just like with the kderot, right? If it slipped on the pots and got damaged, then the bala perot is chayav, because he left it there shelo berishut. Im ichnis berishut, bala chatzer chayav, right? But then if he put it and he accepted responsibility, right? We're assuming the fact that he let him put it there means he's accepting responsibility to watch over it. Then the bala chatzer is chayav if his animal ate them. Hichnis shoro lechatzer balabayit. Let's say you put your shor in someone's field, in someone's house. Shelo birishut. V'nagcho shoro shabal abayit. O shenashcho kalbo shabal abayit. Okay, and then your shor gets attacked by someone in that property. Same exact case, basically. Patur. Okay, again, the owner is patur, because what were you doing putting your shor in that guy's property? Nagachu shoro shabal abayit. But if my shor that I brought into your house started attacking one of your shvarim, then chayav, then obviously I'm responsible. Nafal leboro, let's say I put him in your property, and he falls into your bor, v'hiv ish meimav, and it contaminates your water that was in your bor, chayav, then also I'm responsible. It's the same thing as nagach, right? Whether it attacked your shore, it caused damage to your water. Haya aviv o bino litocho. Let's say the father of the balabayit or the son of the balabayit. I think they're just randomly giving, you know, cases. Somebody happened to be in the bor, and when the shur went into the bor, it fell on them and killed them. Mishalem et hakofer. So again, the owner of the shur is going to have to pay the kofer, obviously only assuming it's a shur muad, and muad for this kind of thing, right? V'im hichnis b'rishu ba'al hachatzer chayav. So if I brought my shur in and you said, no problem, bring your shur in, then the ba'al hachatzer, you're going to be chayav for the fact that, right, again, for the first case, if my shur got attacked by one of your shvarim, then you're responsible because you should have, right, you let my shur in, you said it was okay, that means you accepted responsibility of shmira. Rebbe Omer, b'kulan eino chayav, ad shekabel alav lishmor. Rebbe says, just because you let it in birishut, and I said it's okay if you brought it in here, I didn't say it's okay and you can go walk off and I'll assume all responsibility. Only if I say yes and I'll watch it, it's okay. But if I just say yes, stama doesn't mean that I accepted this to watch. No, I just said, if you want to leave it here, you can leave it here. But I certainly wasn't accepting responsibility to watch over your shore. Now, I'm going to actually have to pay, right? I'm switching the people, but let's say it's you. You're going to now have to pay me because I left my stuff in your property? Rebbe says that's crazy. Only if you say the words, I accept to be a shomer, then you accept shmira, and then you're responsible. But before that, you're not responsible. The Pnei Yeshua just points out something interesting here, which is that if, I have to make sure I get it straight, if I put my shur in your property, okay, and you become a shomer, whether you're Rebbe and you accepted Shmira, or whether you're not Rebbe, you're Tanakama, and you just said, you know, sure, put your stuff in my property, and my shur gets attacked by your shur, you were a shomer on that shur, right? And you, whether if your shur that attacked mine was a shur tam, what are you going to have to pay in that case? You're going to actually have to pay full damage because you are a shomer for my para. And therefore, you have to return me, right? If you're a shomer, you're responsible for the full value of my para. So it becomes this ironic case, basically, that if I bring my shur into your property and it gores your shur and it was a shur tam, it's only going to pay chatzi nezek. But if your shur attacks my shur, if you accepted shmira or you said stama and it's as if you're a shomer, you're actually going to have to pay full damages even if your shur is a shur tam. So it's like kind of ironic. Okay. Now we have to go back to this first case in the Mishnah. Okay? I want to get the line straight. Okay? The first thing it said was Hichnis kderotav shelo birishut, right? And then the behema breaks it, it's patur. Then we said, if the animal gets damaged by them, what did we say? The owner of the kdera is chayav. So now they're gonna, and then the next line was, but if I brought it birishut, then the Baal HaChatzer is going to be chayav on the first case. Now, it's, okay, there's, let's go through the Gemara. The Gemara is a little confusing here because it kind of throws something into question that's really kind of obvious that it's not the case, but we'll see. Tama d'shelo birishut. So look at that first line. What did we say? The second line of the Mishnah was, if it was damaged, right, if I put my gederot in your property and the animal tripped over them and fell, then Baal HaGederot is chayav. But ha birishut lo mechayav Baal HaGederot b'nizkei behemto, right? But the assumption here is, if I put it birishut, right, notice the last line says, echnis birishut Baal HaChatzer is chayav if what? If your animal broke it, right? Your animal breaks my pots, they're chayav. But it doesn't talk about what if the animal was damaged by it, right? But what's the assumption? If the animal got damaged by my parts, and you had said it was okay that I leave them there, and the animal trips over my pots, what's going to be the case? I'm not going to be chayav, right? I'm only chayav if I brought them in lo birishut. But if I brought them in and you gave me permission, and then your animal trips and falls, the assumption, the Mishnah didn't talk about that case, but the assumption is that I would be patur. So now, they're going to make a strange assumption from this. Okay, so now, ha birishut lo mechayav Baal HaGederot b'nizkei behemto, to Baal HaChatzer, right? The Baal HaGederot is not going to be responsible for the nezek he causes to the Baal HaChatzer. The lo amrina, and we don't say, kibule kabil Baal HaGederot nitiruta de behemto, to Baal HaChatzer. We don't say that if I stum bring my HaGederot into your house, I'm assuming responsibility for damages to your animals. In other words, I'm saying, watch my things, but I'm assuming that my stuff, I'm going to make sure. Now, how you're going to make sure is the weird part. I'm not even going to be there. The whole point was I was leaving it to you. But we're assuming that I'm not assuming responsibility now for what damages it's going to cause to your shore. Right? You follow? If I put Mike Day Road, what does it say? I'm only responsible if I leave Mike Day Road and they cause damage to your animals in the case where I didn't get permission from you. But if I got permission from you, then I'm absolved of responsibility. And so therefore, we don't say that I accepted responsibility for nezek that I would cause to your property. And this must be ha-mane rebihi. This must be rebi. De'amar kol b'stama lo kabila le'niti ruta. The assumption, remember what did Rebbe say? If I just say stam, it's okay, then what am I saying? I'm not accepting responsibility. So the assumption is now he's doing it the reverse. He's saying not only are we talking, was Rebbe talking about responsibility for the kederot that I'm bringing, in other words, the responsibility of the Bala Chatzer, now we're also saying if I put my kederot, then I'm stama, not assuming responsibility for what damage they're going to cause. Okay? It's not the same. That's why it's very weird here. The Gemara is comparing two things that are very different. Until now, we assumed that Rebbe was talking about, if I put my stuff in your property and you say it's okay, that means you're not accepting responsibility to be a shomer, according to Rebbe. So now, we're going to jump and say that Rebbe would say the same thing, and that must be what this Mishnah, the line in the Mishnah is referring to, is that I'm only chayav if I left it without reshut, but if I left it with reshut, if I left it bereshut and you agreed to leave it there and I agreed to leave it there, in other words, that by me just saying stama, I'm absolved of responsibility. I'm not saying I'm going to watch over those things. It doesn't really make so much sense. The Gemara is going to reject it, but it's very hard to understand because they're switching who's the shomer and who's the stama. Okay, so now, a maseifa, but then if you want to say that that's Rebbe, that the Bala Kleirot, so now what's Rebbe? Let's just write this on the board so you get it straight. What's Rebbe? Who's kabahem, okay, if he gets damaged by them, the second line of the Mishnah, who's kabahem? Baal akdero chayav, right? And when is baal akdero chayav? Rak imichnis shelo bereshut, okay? Assumption from this, if ichnis bereshut, the baal akdero, okay, I'll just write this, baal akdero is patur. Now, why is he patur? Because stama, he didn't accept responsibility. He never said, I'm accepting responsibility for the damages that my akdero will cause to your shore. He didn't say that, right? So the assumption is stama means he doesn't accept responsibility. And therefore, if stama doesn't accept responsibility, that's why he's patur. This line, according to what the Gemara is understanding now, would only work according to Rebbe. So now we're going to have a problem. Because how could you say that this line is Rebbe, right? Because ema seifa, what does it say after that? Ema seifa imichnis bereshut bala chatzer chayav. Right? If you bring a bereshut, the Bala Chatzer is chayav, that's against Rebbe, because Rebbe says the Bala Chatzer is only going to be chayav for damages it causes to my kederot if he assumed responsibility. So that's atan le Rabbanan. That goes like chachamim, da'am Rebbe stama nami, kibule kabila le netiruta. And additionally, v'tu, and not only that, but it says at the end of the Mishnah, Rebbe omer, v'kulam eino chayav, ashikabela bala bayit lishmor, which means that Rebbe is disagreeing with everything that was said earlier. So how could you say that this is Rebbe? Reishta v'seifa Rebbe u'mitziata Rabbanan? In other words, the beginning is Rebbe, the end is Rebbe, but there's one line in the middle, which is really the second line of the Mishnah, it's not exactly the middle, the Reisha, this second line in the Mishnah is Rebbe. Everything else in the Mishnah is Rabbanan, and then it goes back to Rebbe? That doesn't make any sense. So now we're going to have two answers. Ama Rabbi Zera, which I find a very strange answer because I find the whole question strange. Tavra, Misha Shanazo, Lo Shanazo. Rabbi Zera actually understands the Mishnah that yes, this is Rebbe, the next line is Chachamim, and then in the end it's Rebbe again. And that's the way you read the Mishnah. Rava Amar, Kula Rabbanan, he. Okay, and now he's going to say the answer which we would basically intuit on our own. Ubirshut Shmirab, Kderot, Kibel Alav. I'm sorry, Ubirshut. And when we say it's bereshut, shmirak kederot kibel alav bala chatzer, v'afilu nishberu beruach. In other words, the only reshut that, when we say bereshut, we were talking about the responsibility that the bala chatzer accepts upon himself, that the kederot won't break. But we're not talking about the reshut that of the bala kederot and what responsibility he's accepting upon himself. In other words, they're two totally different things, and that's a much better answer as far as I can tell. Okay, next case. Hichnis perotav l'chatzar ba'al habayit. Okay, so now we're going to talk about what I referenced earlier when we talked about in the Mishnah. How is the animal damaged by the perot? Okay, so Amar Rav lo shanu ela shehuch l'kabahen. It's only in a case where he trips over them. Okay, aval achla patur. Okay, my time, havala shelo tochal. If the animal ate the fruits, then why is he not responsible? Because you could say, what were you doing eating the fruits? In other words, it's your problem you ate the fruits. I didn't tell the para you could eat the fruits. That's, if the para is walking in its normal way and trips over the fruits and gets damaged, of course I'm responsible. But if the animal eats my fruits that I put in your reshut, well, I never gave him permission to eat my fruits. It's his fault for eating it, right? Imagine you, right? Someone's got cookies baking in the kitchen. And somebody comes and eats them, and it turns out they were, you know, they got a big stomach ache from them. So you go to complain to the person who baked the cookies. What'd you do? You know, what'd you do? And I ate too many cookies, and I'm sick from them. And he said, what are you talking about? Who gave you permission to eat my cookies? Right? What are you doing eating my cookies? I never gave you permission. Don't make me responsible. And I never allowed you to eat my cookies. So when I put my fruits in your chatzer, I wasn't giving your animal permission to eat them. So therefore, if he eats them, well, that's his problem, basically. Okay? I'm a Rav Sheshet. Rav Sheshet doesn't like the statement of Rav, and he says, Amina, I'm going to say the kinayim v'shachim Rav Amar lahashmata. Rav must have been half asleep when he said this. Okay, this comes up, by the way, in the Gemara here and there. Right? He must have been sleeping. What kind of ridiculous statement is this? Why? Titanya, because it says in a braita, hanotein samamavit lifnei behemat chavero patur midinei adam v'chayav v'dinei shamayim. If I put poison in front of your animal, I'm patur midinei adam v'chayav v'dinei shamayim. Now, why is that? If I put some poison in front of me, in front of you, because the assumption of this braita is sam hamavet hu delo avida da'achla. If I put some drug that's poisonous, that's not something generally an animal will go eat. And that's why I'm patur midinei adam, because I put something in front of him that wasn't edible. So I don't expect an animal to eat something that's not edible. But what's the assumption of this statement? If it's just sam hamavet that you're going to be patur midinei adam, v'chayav v'dinei shamayim, what if you put peiro in front of an animal, right? If I'll peiro to avidi da achla, right? If I put peiro in front of the animal, and the animal gets damaged or dead by these fruits that I gave him for whatever reason. Bedine adam, nami michayev. The assumption is it's only sama mavet I'm going to be patur from, because I'm not, right? What's the point? If someone leaves cookies in the kitchen, then obviously I'm going to eat them, right? They're out in the kitchen, out in the open to be eaten. But if somebody put something that's not edible and I eat it, well, then I'm not responsible. But if they put something edible in front of an animal, of course the assumption is the animal's going to eat it. So if I put my payroad in your field and there's animals around there, obviously the assumption is that the animals are going to eat it. And therefore, if the animal gets damaged, it is my fault. Okay? And that's why he disagrees with Rav and says, no, it should be your fault also if the animal eats it. So, right, so now they're going to say, so the assumption of this keeps going with his question. The assumption is, you could say the same thing. You shouldn't have eaten them. So, Amre, so how do we answer this? Amre, hu adin afilu peirot nami patur midinei adam. Just because it said sama mavet is patur midinei adam, it doesn't mean we can assume that ochel, you know, peirot would be chayav midinei adam. No. Sama mavet is patur midinei adam. This is how Rav would answer it. And peirot, you're patur midinei adam. Because all those cases, you could say the animal shouldn't have eaten it. So what's the chidush about the sama mavet, which is inedible, right? In other words, if it's edible and we say the animal shouldn't have eaten it, obviously if it's inedible, right, and you're going to be patur midinei adam, obviously if it's inedible, you're going to be patur midinei adam. So what do they say? No. Hakamashlan, the chidush is, da'afilu sama mavet, nami delo avida da'achla, chaya b'dinei shamayim. The chidush is not on the patur b'dinei adam. Everyone's patur b'dinei adam. The chidush is even sama mavet. If you put something inedible, you're still going to be chayav b'dinei shamayim if you cause the death of that animal. Okay? B'ibai de'ema, a second answer could be sama mavet. The case of the sama mavet here wasn't something totally inedible. It was nami ba'afrazta, dahainu peri. It was like in the form of food. They couldn't, right? It was like the cookies, but they were poisonous. Right? So they looked like cookies. They looked really good, but they happen to have had poison in them. So that's a sama mavet. Maybe the sama mavet they're talking about was that it looked like food. And then you would say it's patur because he shouldn't have eaten it, and it's his fault, not your fault. This is another one of those cases where it's someone's responsible. It's a matter of, it's a seesaw, right? Who's more responsible? The one who ate it, or the one, right? Because what's he doing eating it versus the one who put it there? What's he doing putting it there and not assuming that someone's going to eat it? Okay, now we're going to have some questions on Rav. I think we'll stop here for today and we'll pick up from this tomorrow. We're going to have a bunch of questions on Rav from different Braitot that also seem to apply. If you could say this claim, well, what were you doing eating it? Then the person should have been patur, and they're not. So how do we reconcile that?